reading from the poet of the men's movement, and Robert Bly, and I think we got that. Do we have a song?
Oh, okay.
Okay, so I heard the band track.
Another band.
Oh, yeah, we have a track, this is our new track tonight. Ah, okay.
Oh, I saw you go further.
Well, I did.
I did. Remember that stuff that you got to put in?
Oh.
Well, I should have done it the week before, but I didn't.
Give us life, a little life, and as we eat life, our little life, we can build a mighty plane. 641. Not Costello.
Oh.
We don't do that enough. Don't I?
Of course.
It's a gift to be simple. When the hunter saw that, he went back to the castle. Got three men who came to the table, and they bucketed out the water. When they got down to the ground, they saw a wild man lying there. His body was brown and rusty iron. His hair hung down from his head over his face, and all the way to his knees. They tied him with cords and led him back to the castle. At the castle, there was great astonishment over this wild man. And the king had him locked up in an iron cage that he had placed in the courtyard, and he forbade anyone, on pain of death, to open the locked door. He gave the key into the keeping of the queen. Once that had been done, he went to the safety into the forest once more. And the king had an 8-year-old son, who one day was playing in the courtyard. And during that play, his golden ball fell down into the cage. The boy ran to the cage and said, "Give me my golden ball." "Not until you open the door for me," the man answered. "Oh no," said the boy, "I can't do it. The king won't let me." And he ran away. The next day, the boy returned and asked for his ball again. The wild man said, "You open the door." But the boy would not. On the third day, while the king was out hunting, the boy came once again and said, "Even if I wanted to, I couldn't open the lock because I don't have the key." The wild man said, "The key is under your mother's pillow. You can retrieve it." The boy, who really did want his ball back, threw caution to the wind, went into the castle and got the key. The cage door was not easy to open, the boy pinched his finger. When the door stood open, the wild man walked through it, gave the boy the golden ball, and hurried away. The boy suddenly felt great fear. He shouted and cried out after him, "Wild man, if you go away, they will beat me." And the wild man wheeled around, lifted the boy onto his shoulders, and walked with brisk steps into the forest. When the king returned, he noticed the empty cage and inquired of the queen how the wild man had gotten loose. She knew nothing about it. She went to check the key, found it gone. She called the boy, but got no answer. The king sent a search party out into the field, but they did not find the boy. It wasn't difficult to guess what had happened. A great grief and mourning settled on the royal house. This is the story of Iron John, as translated by Robert Bly, who is a poet, from one of the fairy tales by the Brothers Grimm. There are 8 chapters in Bly's book. That portion I just read to you underlies the first chapter of Bly's book. He developed the whole thesis from this story of, he called it Iron John, a book about men. It's shot through with symbolism, for Bly. I'm not going to tell you right up front whether I agree with it or disagree with it, because I think it's worthwhile talking about. He says why he's using this myth. It is in the old myths that we hear, for example, is Zeus energy. The positive leadership energy of men, which popular Celtic nonsense declares does not exist. With King Arthur, we learn of the value of the male mentor in the lives of young men. We hear from the Iron John story the importance of moving from the mother's realm to the father's realm. And from all initiation stories, we learn how essential it is to leave our parental expectations entirely and find a second father or second king. This is Bly speaking. There is male initiation, female initiation, and human initiation. In the book, I am talking about male initiation only. I think this is important because in some sense he's been misinterpreted in some quarters. I want to make clear that this book does not to turn men against women or to return men to the domineering mode that has led to repression of women and their values for centuries. The thought in this book does not constitute a challenge to the women's movement. The two movements are related to each other, but each moves on a separate timetable. The greed dead man has been increasing steadily since the start of the Industrial Revolution. And the greed has reached a depth now that cannot be ignored. That's when it's present. I say the structure of the book is that he picks up on parts of the tale, symbolism, and develops them into his thesis. Remember back on that first part of the story. The great wild man lying at the bottom of the pool. He's taken out, placed in the courtyard. The key is put under the queen's pillow. The boy unlocks it. In the process of unlocking it, he injured his finger. This is life speaking. When a contemporary man looks down into his psyche, he made his conditions of life. Climbing under the water of his soul, lying in an area no one has visited for a long time, an ancient hairy man. The mythological system associates hair with the instinctive, the sexual, and the primitive. What I'm suggesting then is that every modern male has lying at the bottom of his psyche a large primitive being covered with hair down to his feet. Making contact with this wild man is a step the 80s male or the 90s male have yet to take. The bucketing out process, where you're dredging out the water that covers the wild man, bucketing out in the middle of people that are covered bucketing. This has yet to begin in our contemporary culture. Yes. There's the wild man lying under the water, and remove the water. How about the golden ball? The Iron John story proposes that the golden ball lies within the magnetic field of the wild man. Which is a very hard concept for us to grasp. We have to accept the possibility that true radiant energy in the male does not hide in, reside in, or wait for us in the feminine work realm, nor in the macho John Wayne realm, but in the magnetic field of the deep masculine. It is protected by this instinctive one who's underwater and has been there we don't know how long. And the wild man is not just going to hold over the golden ball. What kind of a story would it be, just like the wild man said, okay, take your ball. And he keeps doing this. It's not just this Brother Grimm tale. My mothers are not going to read this whole thing, but he drags in psychologists, psychiatric writings throughout. Here he refers to Jung. Jung remarked that all successful requests to the psyche involve deals. The psyche likes to make deals. The whole thing goes better, as you say, to the last through your lazy part. For instance, if you're lazy, I don't want to work. You let me work for an hour, then I'll let you be a philosopher. For an Iron John, a deal is made. The wild man agrees to give the golden ball back. If the boy opens the cage. Now something marvelous happens. The boy speaks to the wild man. Says, even if I wanted to let you out, I don't know where to keep it. Like that, so by the time we are 35, we don't know where the key is. Isn't it we've forgotten? We never knew in the first place. The story says the king locked up the wild man, when and when he locked up the wild man, he gave the key into the keeping of the queen. My father never told us what he had done. Where is the key? Under the mother's pillow. Just where Freud said it to So he says, the story goes on. This is Bly's commentary. I'm not saying that all fathers are good. Mothers could be right about the father's negative side. But the woman also can be judgmental about masculine traits that are really different than I expected. If the son learns healing primarily from the mother, then he will probably see his own masculinity from the feminine point of view as well. He may be fascinated with it, but he will be afraid of it. He may pity it and want to reform it, or he may be suspicious of it and want to kill it. He may admire it, but he will never feel at home with it. Eventually, a man needs to throw up all his indoctrination and begin to discover for himself what the father is. quite a big discussion of why I'm proposing this. So that said, ancient stories are a good help because they are free of modern psychological prejudices, because they have endured the scrutiny of generations of women and men, and because they give both the light and dark sides of manhood, the admirable and dangerous. Their model is not perfectly a perfect man, nor an overly spiritual man. There are powerful energies inside men, which align like iron gods, in ponds we haven't walked past yet. It is good that the divine is associated with the Virgin Mary and the blissful Jesus, that we can sense how different it would be for young men if we live in a culture where the divine also is associated with mad dancers, gifts, fangs, men, and a being entirely underwater covered with hair. You want to talk about this as we go along, or you want to come to run it? A little more of a story,
huh?
No, I do a Kiva, and go back and forth, just think of it a little bit, and what you're talking about, how you interpret it. So here we have the boy gone with the wild man. When the wild man had reached the dark forest once more, he took the boy from his shoulders, put him down on the earth, and said, "You will never see your mother and father again, but I will keep you with me. For I have said, you have set me free, and I feel compassion for you. If you do everything as I tell you, all will go well. I have much gold and treasure, more than anyone else in the world." The wild man prepared a bed of moss for the boy to sleep on, and in the morning took him to a spring. Do you see this golden spring? It is clear as crystal and full of light. I want you to sit beside it and make sure that nothing falls into it, because if that happens, it will wrong the spring. I'll return each evening to see if you obey my orders." The boy sat down at the spring there. Occasionally he glimpsed a golden fish or a gold snake, and he took care to let nothing fall in. But as he sat there, his wounded finger, he hurt his finger as he opened the cage. It was so painful that without intending to, he dipped it into the water. He pulled it out instantly. But he saw that the finger had turned to gold, and no matter how much he washed it, the washing did no good. Iron John came back that evening and said, "Anything happened to the spring today?" The boy held his finger behind his back to keep Iron John from seeing it, and said, no, nothing at all." "Ah, you've dipped your finger into the spring," said the wild man. "We can let it pass this once, but don't let that happen again." Early the next morning, the boy sat again at the spring, watching over it. His finger still hurt, and after a while he ran his hand up to his hair. One hair left came loose from his head and fell into the spring. He immediately reached down and pulled it out, but the hair had already turned to gold. The moment Iron John returned, he knew what had happened. "You've let a hair fall into the spring. I'll allow it this time. But if it happens a third time, it will dishonor the spring, and you will not be able to stay with me any longer." The third day, as the boy sat by the spring, he was determined, no matter how much his finger hurt him, not to let it move. Time passed slowly, and he began gazing at the reflection of his face in the water. He got the desire to look straight into his own eyes, and in doing this, he leaned over farther and farther. All at once, his long hair fell down over his forehead and into the water. He threw his hair back. But now all of his hair, every bit, had turned gold. And it shone as if it were the sun itself. Now the boy was right. He took out a kerchief and covered his hair so that the wild man wouldn't know what had happened. But when Iron John arrived home, he knew immediately. "Take the kerchief off your head," golden hair that came up and down over the boy's shoulders, and the boy asked his mind, "You can't stay here any longer because you didn't make it through the trial. Go out into the world now, and there you will learn what poverty is. I see no evil in your heart, however, and I wish you well, so I'll give you this gift. Whenever you are in trouble, come to the edge of the forest and shout, 'I'm John.' Andrea, I'll come to the edge of the forest and help you. My power is great, greater than you believe, and I have gold and silver in abundance. Okay, the boy's finger, this is why I'm speaking. Hits of wounds, each of us has already received in our attempts to let the wild man out of the cage. Old men don't hit us with wounds, we do it ourselves. Whether the old man of the past scarred us with a seashell or tattooed us painfully, talking about tribal initiation practices, you know, the scars stem from wounds that are already there, come missing tooth, that we have already felt for that time. This he's referring to an Australian Aboriginal ritual in which the old man knocked tooth from the young man's face. The wounded finger in our story stands for a wound most young men in our culture have already retrieved. The recovery of some form of initiation is essential to the culture. The United States has undergone unmistakable decline in the 1950s. And I believe that if we do not find a third road with final thinking, we have a grandiose road taken by junk bomb dealers, high rollers, and they don't require that yet. When they have a depressed road taken by long-term alcoholics, single mothers, low poverty lines, crack addicts, and fatherless men. The ancient practice of initiation offers a third way through between the two natural roads of manic excitement and victim excitement. A mentor or male mother enters the landscape, which in our story is a wild man on iron gun. The young man investigates or experiences these wounds in the presence of this independent, timeless, mythological, initiatory being. If the young man feels the key and climbs on the shoulders of this being, three things will change. The wound, rather than being regarded as bad luck, will be seen as a gift. Second, the sacred water will appear, whatever that is. Finally, the energy of the sun, the symbolism of the gold, will somehow be carried into the man's body. Not so good, so far? Story, Norma says, the story is a lot better than Bly's analysis. Okay? The inadvertently dislodges one hair and turns to gold. He learns these tricks. Sexual energy is good. The hunting instinct, which mammals possess without shame, is good. Animals eat, feel some compassion, spontaneity is good. And excess, extravagance, going with the hand, out beyond the castle boundaries, is good also. I'm skipping. There's a whole several pages on here on the importance of hair in primitive culture that we've forgotten.
Very hairy, and I just assumed male equals hairy. I was very rudely awakened when I got to college, and I found all these men who had no hair at all in their chest. I said, wait a minute, I thought men had hair in their chest, and I just assumed that, you know. And I said, oh, I'm wrong.
A little more story.
Well, the story of Samson in the Bible, where when they cut his hair, he lost
his hair. Who cut his hair? Part three is very short. Then the king's son left the forest to walk by deepest and uneven paths ever offered until at length he reached the great city. There he looked for work. at the time, he had learned from nothing, but he could help himself. At length, he went to his house, and that's what they were taking in. The people about the court did not at all know what use they could make of him, but they liked him, so it was good. At length, the cook took him into his service and said he might carry wood and water and rake the cinders together. You've got to...
Cinder fella, yeah.
That's what the Bible relates it to. The point here, he says, is that we've got to get down to earth, as the phrase goes. We know that for hundreds of thousands of years, he says, men have admired each other and have been admired by women, particularly for their activity. The men here to enter the realm now, engage them, fight them, wrestle with the soul of the animal, to learn the dance of cross through the veil of the young Viking men sometimes train themselves by walking on the end of the oars while the rowers continue rowing. Until recent times, women have not been praised for their activity. They have been asked for centuries to live in an enforced captivity, demanded of them by monks, doctors, philosophers, moralists, theologians, and judges. Women are coming out into activity, just as men are passing on going the other way, in the passivity. During the last 30 years, men have been asked to learn how to build and flow, how to follow rather than lead, how to live in a non-hierarchical way, how to be vulnerable, how to adopt consensual decision making. Some women want to pass a man if they want a man at all. The church wants to pay the man, they call priests. The university wants a domesticated man. The corporation wants a team worker and so on. So you get a passive man. You've got to get away from this line. With passivity, you also get a naive man who feels the pride in being attacked. The fall from being a king's son to being a cook, that's the second story I have for. Carrying wood and water, working in the basement of the castle where the kitchen is. That was rocked to the floor as he sat. The humiliation, the way down and out. The young men who have graduated from privileged colleges, or who have been lifted upward by the expensive and violent culture, their soul life often begins with this basement work in the kitchen. We don't know how to do it, though, it's with initiators drawn from our culture, people tell us how to do it. We do not receive instruction on how to go down on our own. We could use the phrase going in free for a time of active descent. But one sometimes feels that in the United States, a man is supposed to be from the funeral. When initiation took place, old men help the boys to move from the mother's world to the father's world. Boys can live happily dispersed in the mother's world, and the father's world naturally seems to be dangerous, unsteady, and the father's world naturally seems unsteady. The father's world seems dangerous, unsteady, and full of unknown. We learn one valuable thing as we watch one young man without mentors. A young man cannot make the move to the father below without taking on the trickster. We surmise, then, that when a man accepts the descent as a way to move to his father's house, he learns to look at the death side of things. He glances down to the rat's hole, which is also the snake's hole, and he accepts the snake rather than the bird as his animal. The father in the middle-class household may own the car and the credit card, but the mother lives longer and comes back from the cemetery after the father is buried. Initiation asks the son to move his love energy away from the attractive mother to the relatively unattractive serpent father. All that is ashes wood. No doubt, breaking the cinders. Not me, why? When a man enters this stage, he regards descent as a holy thing. He increases his tolerance to ashes, eats dust as snakes do, increases his stomach with terrifying insight, deepens his ability to digest the evil facts of history, accepts the job of working 7 years under the ground, leaves the granary at will through the rat's hole, fights on cinders, learns to shudder, and follows the voice of the old mole through the ground. Once, when it happened, no one else was there. The cook ordered the boy to carry the food to the royal table. But because the boy did not want his golden hair to be seen, he kept his cylindrical hat. I don't know why this puppet is doing in Europe, but keep his trabouche off. Such a thing as that has never happened in King's Place, he said. When you come to the royal table, you say, be careful. And he answered, Lord, I cannot. I have a slow place on my head. The king called the cook out, scolded him, demanded how he could have taken such a boy as that into his service, and told him to fire the boy and get him out of the castle. Not much. But as Bly develops this, this is the hunger for the king in a time with no father.
Is this supposed to be his own father, the king that he's serving?
Substitute father? During the long months the son spent in the mother's body, his body got well tuned to female frequencies. It learned how a woman's cells broadcast, who bows to whom in that resonant field, what animals run across the grassy clearing. He becomes a good receiver for the upper and lower frequencies of the mother's voice. He attunes to that frequency for his job. Now, standing next to the father as they repair arrowheads or repair fowls, or pistons and gasoline, or care for birthing animals, the son's body has a chance to lead too. Slowly, over months or years, the son's body strings begin to resonate a harsh, sometimes demanding, testily, humorous, irreverent, impatient, opinionated, forward-driving, silence-loving, old and masculine body. Both male and female cells carry marvelous music, but the son needs to resonate to the masculine frequency as well as the female frequency. Women cannot, no matter how much they sympathize with their starving sons, replace that particular missing substance. The son later may try to get it from a woman his own age, but that doesn't work either. Yeah.
But, I mean, is it part of a close-minded
movement, or
is there anything to indicate how they should be taking somebody's life so
they can
become their own?
Oh, yeah.
And, well,
just
a bit of that.
We're getting there.
Keep going.
Keep
going.
Keep going.
How do
The cook had pity on the youngster and changed him to the garden floor. Now the boy had to set up plants in the garden, water, sharpen the hoe and spade, and let wind and bad weather do what they wish. The king's daughter saw him, and as he was watching, his trabouche fell off, and his hair glowed and blazed up so bright that the beams of sunlight went all the way into her bedroom. She said, "Boy, bring me a basket of flowers." She put his hat on, took some wildflowers, and brought it back to life. Says, "What are you doing bringing me some ordinary flowers? Get moving. Pick another bouquet. The best we have is most beautiful." "No, no," said the boy. "Wildflowers have stronger fragrance." The king's daughter said, when he picked the little flower, "Take your headpick off. You can probably wear it in my presence." She replied, "I don't care for that. I have a name." He grabbed his hat, yanked it off. His golden hair tumbled down around his shoulders. She started out the door, but she held him by the arm, giving him a handful of gold children. He took them.
Gold children?
Gold children. Go Cohen. He gave it to the gardener, to the gardener's children to play with. Same thing happens the next day, and the next day. And she couldn't manage to get his hat off any time. He wouldn't take the gold coins. Gold. We have already come a long way in this story. The boy, after he has left with the wild man, has been introduced to soul. If you give a soul, a hair to the soul, it will cover the hair with gold. If you make a road toward it, it will cut down brush to make a road toward you. After this, the boy manages to get to the castle, drops into ashes, and finally visits briefly the king's chambers. But bless, we can't stop the story yet because the feminine has not yet appeared. If, as the male is growing, we meet the mysterious woman. And so what does she do? She starts. She requests flowers from the boy. Second piece, the king's daughter, which is clearly related, the soul of fire, the sacred king, or whatever word one wants to use, in the story of the king, high in his country's chamber. Third, she likes gold. She likes the boy with golden hair. She wants a gold coin to return to the wild flower. Finally, she knows about it. The king wasn't sure that he was dead. He knows. At some point, initiation tests every young man to become a lover. He develops a lover in him from seed to flower. We know that in the Renaissance, it was not unusual for a young man to take time, at that time, to take 2 or 3 years off and spend it learning to be a lover. We spend those years in graduate school. The young man would learn poems by heart, practice setting them to his own music, and sing. Window bar with a garden work with longing in it. The mysterious hidden woman loves pharmacy, the hanging trees, the long skirts, the shadowy places on the bridges, rooms with a low lighting. One intense sexual storm in a hay barn means more to the mysterious woman than 3 years of tepid lovemaking. She wants passion and purpose in a man who carries a weighty desire in her. A passion somewhere between erotic feeling and religious intensity. He doesn't say how he knows it.
It's his male
enhanced
creation. I have a couple questions about it.
Go on.
Okay. In this part, it's a nurturing role to take care of the garden. On the other hand, he covers his hair when he goes in the king's chamber, and he covers his hair when he comes home. So he is not letting himself shine.
Right.
You know, he's still, whatever, hiding.
Uh-huh.
Is it, I mean, I don't know. But, I mean, I haven't read the book, but that comes out somehow. I don't know if he discusses that at all. Or...
discusses a lot of things.
But, if, what, I mean, Moana just said, Dick, where is his name going to live?
Makes you wonder. No,
but he's talking about the way people live, this minority group. He's talking about the noble class. He's not talking about the most common people at all. I mean, it's like making up a journey or something like that for people to take out of the... not very much.
Let me finish the story. Give me another one for the interpretation. Next thing that happened, the country was swept up in war. The king gathered his forces and was not bothered if he could proceed against the enemy, who was powerful, and retained a large army. The gardener's boy said, "I'm quite grown now, and I will go to war." The other man laughed and declared, "When he's gone, you will get the stable. We'll leave a horse behind for you." And when they had all gone, he went to the barn. Let a horse out. It was laden one way, and it walked hit of it. He climbed on it and rode to the dark forest. When he came to his edge, he called 3 times, "Iron John." So so loud it echoes through the trees. Wild and alive, what do you want? I want a strong war horse because I intend to go to war. You'll get that. And more than you have asked for as well. The wild answer, I went back into the world. Not long after, the stable boy came out of the tree, leading a wild horse, a war horse, that blew air to its nostrils and was not easy to hold in. Running along behind the horse came a large band of warriors, entirely clothed in iron, with their swords shining in the sun. The boy turned his three-legged nag over to the stable boy, mounted a new horse, and rode out at the head of the soldiers. By the time he neared the battlefield, a large part of the king's men had already been killed, and not much more was needed to bring them to total defeat. The boy and his iron band right onto the battlefield, wiped the enemy like a hurricane, struck down every one of the foes. The enemy turned to flee, but the boy kept after them and pursued them with the last man. He looked good as a king, but the boy fixed his back. He bound him up and way back to the forest and called Iron John. "What do you want?" said the wise man. "Take your horse and your men back and give me again the three-legged nag." So that happened, and he rode the hobbit back home. And the king's daughter congratulates him on his victory. "It wasn't me," he said, "but a strange knight in warrior band who arrived to help." And they all fell over themselves laughing. The king said to his daughter, "I will arrange a great festival that will last 3 days, and you will be the one that throws out the golden apple. Perhaps the mysterious knight will appear." Yeah, he's got another problem. So he goes to the edge of the forest. What do you do? He calls Iron John. "What do you need?" says Iron John. "I want to catch the golden apple the king's daughter is going to throw." "No problem," says Iron John. "You virtually have it in your hands right now. I'll provide you more. Red armor to be a deity and a powerful chestnut horse." He goes to the field at proper time, gallops in among the other knights. No one recognized him. King's daughter steps forward and she throws a golden apple into the group of men. He was the one who caught it. But he galloped off and gone. The second day arrived. Iron John puts him out of his pocket armor and gives him a white horse. This time the apple falls into his hands too. Once again he doesn't pause. He gallops off. This made the king angry. The king said, "This behavior is not allowed. He's supposed to ride over to me and report his name. If he catches the apple a third time," he says, "he says to his men, chase him. What's more, if he refuses to return, hit him a blow, use your sword." And for the third day of the festival, Iron John gives the young man another suit of armor, another horse. This time black armor and a black horse. And he catches the apple again. They get close enough, the men chasing him, to give him a wound, a leg wound, with the end of a sword. His horse made such a powerful leap as the young man jumps off, that the young man's helmet falls off, and everyone can see that he had golden hair. They go back and tell the king about this. The king's daughter the next day inquired to the gardener about the boy. He's back at work in the garden. Goof went to the festival yesterday. I only got back last night. Now he showed my children the big golden apple he wanted.
Yeah.
The king called the young man in. He comes in with a tarpouche on his head. Mm-hmm. The king's daughter goes up and pulls it off, and his golden hair fell down over his shoulder. The king says, "Are you the knight who appeared each day at the festival with a different color horse? And each day he caught the golden apple?" "I am," he said. "Here are the apples. I'm also the knight who helped defeat the enemy. If you can perform feats of that magnitude, you are obviously not a gardener's boy. Who is your father, man?" "My father is a notable king, and I have a great deal of gold, as much as I will ever need." "It's clear," said the king, "that I'm in debt to you. Whatever I have in my power that would please you, I will give." "Well, give me your daughter as my wife." The king's daughter laughed, and she said, I like the way he doesn't beat around. And when all the guests were sitting at the table for the marriage feast, the music breaks off all at once. Great doors in the open. And a baronial king enters, accompanied in procession by many attendants. He walked up to the young groom and embraced him. The guest said, I am Iron God, who through an enchantment became turned into a wild man. You have freed me from that enchantment, and all the treasure I own will now belong to you. More than I can get into there, I think. There is symbolism for the red, the white, and the black, which he goes into. We need, very much the present, which is like over here, men and women, he says, also, to develop an inner warrior. And as you read about the men's movement, if you go to a weekend, just be a man, you get a lot of inner warrior, again, you have to learn to be able to fight, to be able to resist. He makes it clear that he is not talking about being overtly aggressive, not militaristic. Let me read one last part about this. The adult warrior inside both men and women, when trained to receive a blow without sulking or collapsing, knows how to fight for limited goals, keeps the rules of combat in mind, and in general is able to keep the fighting clean and to establish the limits. This is right in the middle of what he's talking about here, bringing the interior warrior back to life. You hear that on the line. But the point of all this is, if it has any point, I think it is that he's speaking to men, but in some sense he's speaking to all of us, and he doesn't admit it. We should stop being so damn passive, and talk back, and find ourselves. What's developed out of this, as I said, from our meeting, the men's workshop, the men's weekend, where you get out into the work, take your clothes off, drop it, jump into the pond, get carried in the pond, scrum, yell and scream, beat on drums. This brings out the inner warrior in you. You let down the defenses, get down, he says, and you build them up. You find something that's missing in modern life. You find the father. The father you've never had. Did you have something? No.
You want to?
Yes and no.
Does the woman want to find her father? Does the woman want to find her father or her mother? What?
He doesn't address that. He makes it clear he's not. He's dealing with men only. That is one thing that I feel is seriously wrong with the thesis. So this is divisive.
Well, I was involved in co-counseling where the emphasis was getting in touch with your feelings.
Yeah.
A lot of crying and things like that went on.
I think it's fairly built on that. Right. All the, remember in the 60s and the 70s.
I was going to say, you were primal scream movement and all that sort of thing. It's really not all that much new in this. I think it comes in a different way.
Again, he says he's not excluding women. He's addressing this to men only because he feels it's important that men who have become passive and naive, he says, without them have a lead, have lost their inner warrior.
Well,
find us again.
Yeah. Okay, but I think the women have gotten that too.
I think that's the reason that why focuses this so tightly on men's needs and issues that he feels there's a need to balance the effect of the women's liberation.
Well, there's been nothing said about
provide
women on any of the
women's kind of stuff. Experience of growth for men.
I'm not sure that he actually says that, but
okay.
In the,
this is much more passive than me going out in the woods and acting like warriors is much more passive than the women's period, but it's so clear.
It's in a directive, that's for sure. You know, the women's movement had that strand to it, just like move to raise consciousness raising. There was also a lot, I think, in the feminist revival of the 70s that was urging women to get out and do things, to work politically, to get trained, to move into job fields. But
very terrible.
I don't see anything of that in the men's movement that is characterized by Bly. It's all looking inside yourself rather than outward directed.
My feeling is that this is not addressing men's movement, women's movement. I don't even feel it as much as men versus women. I'm seeing it as getting inside and finding out what is the underlying essence of the human being that's been covered up by layers of culturation and I would say maybe goal heavy in some cases the soul influence of women, but also what society perceives as being female, which I don't necessarily agree with. But finding out the depth of what a human being really is. And I don't see it as related necessarily to the Janoff. Finding that traumatic event that's caused a spin off and pathological depression or whatever. I just need to find the essence of what you are.
Yes.
My feeling is, first of all, with so much of the feminist literature, and there's been tons of it in the last 20, 30 years, and very little of it, none of it really addressed men, except some of it very negatively. So I think it's time that, I really like this. I really think that it's time that men have something also. I think that Y needs to be more specific, perhaps, now and in the future writings, whatever, to make certain that it is not seen as men versus women or men set against women. Because my feeling about it is very much that it seems to be not that way. But I do think that, yes, he does not urge men to go out and do stuff yet, but people have to find their inner core and understand that before they can go outwards. I mean, that's true of all humans. And whatever that core is, it may be, I think there is some difference in much of the masculine community.
But you know, it's
like,
yeah.
Rosemary.
And Sharon.
In the face of what has been documented as really increasing violence against women by men, I think it's a little tricky to emphasize these wild men being in such a positive manner. And also, I think he's speaking to one relatively small group of men. I don't think he's speaking to the mass of men whose psyche is being crushed and destroyed by being in big corporations and being, you know, having problems on the job market and being crushed by the political system. So this is kind of an elitist little group he's talking to.
Same criticism was made by the feminists that they were talking to the middle class white educated women, not addressing the concerns of working women at all.
Yeah, but that
had
spread out a lot.
This will come up. Oh, yeah, this will
come on. He has a series of tapes I follow along with very much. I wish I had tapes, and I'm very interested in this. But the one thing I think he does, he makes a distinction between women's experience of the patriarchy. And the man, you know, I think that the women, I remember it so it fit my own experience so well. It said that the girls feel rejected, they feel embarrassed, they feel not exactly what they feel injured from Bible patriarchy because we are, considered lesser. Whereas men from the patriarchy, I believe he said that they're alienated from the father because the father's out of the house. You know, it was a traditional middle class. The father was not there, he's not present for the son and in his right of passage. You know, where it was in the medieval times, he was there, and the son went through somewhere in that passage. So, but the women's experience is that these kids were injured by the patriarchy. And also, I think this is my own opinion, but I think that as far as women and mothers, or girls know the mother better. As far as she is the head of a household, and she's a working mother, the working class family often has like two jobs, not just one, but two even today. The girl knows the mother and the nurturing of the mother much better than the, forget that connection to the matriarchy. But I would think, too, that women need to go through some sort of, if they experience a lot of happiness, some sort of right of passage where they're, out there and creating their own identity. Something like something. Well, I think it's kind of like what it's...
Can you need to put my problem out of that? We really need to provide this to be in place for the American people. Specifically about American countries that are problem here in the United States. It's we would need to divide ourselves right now. Men on this side, men on this side. Like, okay, men do this. Find yourself. Reject the fact that you know, you're women. Come on. You do this.
I think what you're saying is that men are this belief that you have a sort of kind experience of themselves in the culture. And it's not really, you don't have to think of it excluded, you think of inclusive of this type of experience. And it really doesn't talk to me. And I'm interested in this because I was told growing up and really interested in this or something like that. But I don't really think of it as excluding me. I just don't think of it as addressing my own personal experience in the world. And it doesn't really excuse me.
Don't women mean father? Don't father figure?
Yeah.
Don't know? I don't know.
Yeah.
Sharon, finally got to you.
I'm curious about the quality of aggression that he suggested. I mean, he seems to be implying that aggression is a natural part of a man. And I didn't get, you're saying not that aggressive, and yet he keeps using these terms, warrior, and the warrior had to kill every last one. And yeah. So what, why did he say the warrior had to kill every last one, even though it sounded like that all of the 31 men? I mean, does he define the nature of man as far as aggression?
Yeah. He talks about a physical warrior. Back in the Middle Ages, up until the end of the 18th century, whatever. He quotes a French knight. Battle is a joyous thing. We love each other so much, in fact. If we see that our father is just and our kinsmen fight boldly, tears come to our eyes. With a sweet joy arises in our hearts and the feeling of our honest loyalty to each other. Do you think that this honest feels as if afraid of death? Not in the least. He is so strengthened, so delighted, he doesn't know where he is. This is a warrior. Mingling with a lover. Mingling is gone. The physical warrior disintegrated into the soldier when mechanized warfare came on. And we pick it up during the last battles of the Civil War, the American Civil War. Slaughter. General Grant slaughter chose to remain drunk. The Second World War, the First World War, 1,000 young men died in one day, all of them died without seeing the machine gun to kill them. But like Dresden, Nagasaki, Hiroshima, B-52 bombings. Contemporary war has made the heat of aggression seem disgraceful. The Vietnam veteran suffered soul damage when he went into battle imagining he served a warrior god and came back out of it godless.
since I've seen this article, that means it is.
No, because 5,000 bucks removed the tax from her.
And nobody, and you found that if he owns the press,
right? Well, this is out of place.
Okay, so then we're getting, this is why Harold Choi, you know, the guy from the African Studies Department, I heard a radio program on Gene Carano the other day, and he outright said it's a bunch of regressive junk. He really panics. It's very unspoken about
it. The whole idea of the camaraderie and the great spirit of the warriors is a wonderful, wonderful precept to hear. And historically in our wars, they were usually compressed. Either they were poor, they received no medical care, so if they got some kind of wound, they would die.
Right.
They lived off the land by killing and slaughtering and stealing the grain. And in war was not the shit any more than life was for 99 and out of every 100 people. Who's close to being stuck with gold and gold? I mean, this is the kind of thing that 7-year-olds do. I am going to come on my wonderful horse, and I will save the kingdom, and I will save the world, and the human protection world will say, this is kid stuff, this is cartoon stuff. And it can be that any kind of stuff that sure appeals to 6-year-olds. I say, we're older. And we know that even though we love to be the leader of the world, I would be most modest to kick people. I don't think that. Right. However, there are too many of us. We have to cooperate. We can't make them. We have to work by consensus. We have to put down our own wonderful independent confidence for it. But I think it's better to story in public, but I think to try and turn that into anything that is real for today is a pretty crap.
Yeah, this is the part of Bly's book I have a hard time with. He's not very clear about the function of the warrior, in a warrior. And I think it's the part of his thesis that he is most likely, most of them misinterpreted. One of you guys, you both have your hands up. You can see.
This seems very culture specific, and you said that, and then when she's talking about the U.S. But the myth in the U.S. is that children grow up in either family, they separate. And take that. You steal the key from your mother to be able to leave home. So you start off with deception. I mean, I have some problems with the myth in the book. I think it's very interesting. But the whole thing is to grow up is to, you know, to leave home, never having to lose your mother and father again, you know, and go out and take your path in the world or whatever it is. And that is kind of the thing that is culturally seen as very important. Whereas other cultures, it's more family-oriented, it's more group-oriented. This would not resonate at all. I think the reason it calls it, part of it says, that's the appropriate path for people to do, is to leave home, to be able to be independent and self-sufficient, and learn how to lead, and let your light shine, etc.
Be an individual.
The wild man does have some constraints. I mean, the task he set this guy is to be in control, not to let anything happen. And I did see a tape where Warriors interviewed him, and he said the wild man is the one that sets the boundaries. You know, so I think the name the wild man confuses people. You know, if you think of it as something unrestrained, without limits, you know, without... And the wild man, I think, throughout this, is control, sets the boundaries, has tasks, has a richness, and if you want to get it in very intense, it's the edge of it, so some degree. He doesn't say that, but it's that, you know, it's that part of us that if we forget it, can come up and slap us in the face, too. I mean, the depth and knowing that. So I have a mixed reaction to this because I think some of it's valuable, but the terminology uses is confusing, and why seems to be a very fuzzy thinker. It's horrible. But the thing is, he's coming from the point of view where he talks about his poetry. It's his father was an alcoholic, you know, and very much an absent father. So he's having personal issues at some level, what he's having to do. But in thinking this,
you know, part of the one feels like nursing is allowing choices, but the other thing was just having the family environment so it wasn't all medical needs, was having to be the family domain, was having fathers be parents and take on nurturing roles and everything. So the time going up today, hopefully we can agree, you know, where it wasn't so clearly female nominated or male dominated for that matter. It made it more confusing. I think it's worth discussing.
I think he's on to something. Two more comments.
Okay. I think that a lot of us have been missing the main point here. The wild man, the Jewish covenant, is setting the boundaries, setting the dance. And he's wild, not in the sense of unchained violence, but of aboriginal death. Yeah. This is the most deep-rooted masculine character. Not wild, unchained wild. And the warrior that he's talking about is probably more akin to the warrior that Castaneda talks about in the stories of John Locke. This is a person who knows what he wants, how to achieve it, and is controlled and focused on achieving the objective. Not necessarily violent, although violence is not excluded. And the way of the warrior that he's talking about here is this learning to be your own master.
At half point, I think that's what it is. He says, the wild man can only come to full life inside when a man has gone through serious discipline. The wild man, through the discipline, prepares an emotional body that can receive grief, ecstasy, and spirit. The wild man's energy is that energy which is conscious of a wound. The wild man is a better guide in some ways to our pain. The pain that we suffer from the place of childhood abuse and abandonment. The wild man is not a child, he knows stories that lead us into his personal suffering and through it. The aim is not to be the wild man, but to be in touch with the wild man. Trying to be the wild man ends in early death. For everyone. Let's see if we get a look. I do want to share with you two poems. Yeah. One of these, 3 weeks ago, Nora and I went to a weekend, a dance weekend, which we do occasionally. This one was on the campus of Valparaiso University in Indiana, known to the natives as Valpo. We were in a dorm. You got women's bathrooms, you got men's bathrooms. And inside the women's bathroom, before anybody got there, I don't know how long it had been there, in the women's bathroom, somebody had posted this poem. Oh, what a luxury it be, how exquisite, what perfect bliss, so ordinary and yet chic, to pee the bits, to take a leak. To feel your bladder just go free and open up the mighty mist. And all your cares float down the creek to feed a fish to take a leak. For gentlemen of great physique who can hold water for 1 week. For ladies who 1/4 cup of tea can fill completely up. For folks in urinalysis, for Viennese and Greek and Swiss, for little kids just learning this, for everyone it's pretty great. Of course, for men it's much more grand. Women sit or squat. We stand and hold the fellow in our hand and proudly watch the mighty arc, adjust the range and make our mark on stones or posts for rival men to smell and not come back again. Women are so circumspect. but men can kiss with great effect. The terrible hydraulic force can make a stream or change its course, can put out fires or cigarettes. And sometimes, laying down in her bed, late at night, outside the bar, we like to aim up at the star. How's that for a male with Steve? Women's room. This was
supposed to be. Men's and women's dorms. Everybody was on the men's floor. So they converted one of the men's bathrooms to a women's bathroom and women's bathroom. And inside, there's a case door. In the central women's toilet was that foot. Obviously intended to charge to the men. In fact, I discovered that at least a third of the men had beds. I hope you won't. Why does this poet think it grand to take his tiny shriveled feet and grasp it in his sweaty hands and feet? Perhaps it is his greatest fear that if he doesn't grab his friend, the object which he holds in his hand, it might fall.
Do you want to do this at the end?
At the end, yeah.
Okay.
One more song at the end.
We're going to sing after we get through with announcements. Right now, I want to sing. Usually we do Joys and Sorrows. Mary?
I have a joy. I have a job for the fall. I'll be a fourth grade teacher in Brooklyn, which is 18 miles
from there. Oh, that's great.
I'm more than full-time employee for the song.
Good.
Very good. Heidi? Yeah.
Darren Pryor Ackerman is in the hospital. She's getting stabilized and hoping that she can get out on Wednesday. And she's at Darren Hospital in the hospital in the morning.
I'm sorry.
I have enjoyed all of us that went to church in July, and I feel very good about it, and I credit the society for helping us.
Will you both be teaching?
No, I will be teaching them all.
Do it too.
Yes, we will.
Is this considered a temporary or a permanent?
It's not considered temporary by me.
Is this in the text?
No, it is not.
Where will you be going?
In Oslo.
I'd love to learn more about it. For me, I love learning.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Souvenirs. Change of batteries and speak London.
Not yet. I'm already as fast as I can.
Yeah. Wow.
Any other stories in Charlotte?
Yeah. I guess it's kind of a sorrow. I found that one of my sisters, who is a career Air Force wife, has been in, you know, stationed in a number of places, but they're currently in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, and they're about to be moved to Guam, and they will be there for two years. So that's not too bad. At least give me a long way. So I don't think I'm going to see them.
I was
sort of
Oklahoma City. We got mics. Bring in the mice, go outside so they can play with them.
And then you have to play with them.
So you're not falling to
death. We have one of our choices. We're going to have a vacation this year.
Ah.
We didn't have one since last year, and I think we're ready. We're feeling quite grateful about being able to go away for 2 weeks. We're first going to head up to Minneapolis here in Grandchild. We're going to Calgary for General Assembly. And if anybody knows where the banner is, just let me know.
Oh, I have it.
Okay.
Actually, I gave it to you.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got all the prairie stuff together. Bad.
Well, I don't know. And I don't know if anybody knows from Jack's place to buy.
I was wondering about that.
Oh, yeah.
It survived. It survived. It took down 15 trees on their yard. Wiped out houses all across the street.
I know.
One right across the other. But not his house.
But I wasn't sure they had phone service.
Yeah, the phone rang. I couldn't hear from them. Yeah, I called. A woman at my office lost half of her house. I mean, she was in Milwaukee's place.
So, and then we're going to, Dick and I live in Alberta, 60 to 63, and so we're going to be spending some time there. You and scenes from our youth, I guess, and honeymoon and what have you. So we're looking for, we'll be back, I hope, by the 12th. With Theo's the next week, on the 19th, about General Assembly. Pat, you have
Oh, I was just going to talk about the geology. Mm-hmm. I didn't reach them, but they're all new and working, and I was pretty sure they're home going to the family. But that is.
Mm-hmm. Any other directions, Charlie? Any visitors this morning? We like what you're visiting and want to introduce yourself. Any announcements?
Is Nancy Griffith here?
Graham.
Yeah,
right here.
Heidi gets to do this.
Just to put some other words on it. As a function of the membership committee chair, I'd like to say welcome to Prairie and thank you for joining our membership. And we're glad to
be here.
I'm a volunteer for some years with the Madison Aids Support Network, and I talked to Mike and he was looking for ideas for programs, and so he said we should do something next week. Now, I will now be mainly the speaker of a woman who is the health education outreach person from NMFM, will be doing the speaking. Her name is Peaches Daisy. She's quite a character. She has a lot of knowledge, and she does much more of speaking about AIDS to groups than I do, so I think you'll be in better hands than I was speaking. But I will also be talking a little bit then about the Means Project Quilt, which was here last October and will be coming to Washington this coming October, and a number of us are going to go for that, so I'll speak about that. So I hope to see all of you next week.
I'm sorry, is it Nancy talked to the employees where I work, and I thought she didn't find out at the time when you guys shared with me. Rachel?
Well, I have an announcement on a request of a personal nature. In mid-July, Project Homes, which is an organization that helps people with home repairs and whatever, elderly, disabled, low income. I'm going to, through that, I'm going to get a roof on my house.
Oh,
yes. And I'll have to pay some, but it would be less expensive than having to spend a lot of time on that. The man in charge of the program said that we could use volunteers. So it wouldn't necessarily be that the volunteers would be up on the roof. Well, you know, if they're scared of heights, they could be picking up the shingles they throw off the roof. Putting them in a dumpster that will be there and carrying shingles for the people who can do carry shingles and things like that. So I'm hoping that the fire people will be able to help.
Will there be an announcement in the third fire about when and where?
I will. If people tell me they're interested in doing something like this, I'll take their name and then I'll contact them when I know.
I am reluctant that today's deadline for the prairie fire for June. As we hope to get on the road today, I'd like you to have the announcements done by noon to get in the prairie fire. I think we're going to hopefully finish putting something in and get it ready to go to the prairie. It's quite a bit in there already, but. Yes, so Jeff and Michelle are going to be staying in our place to house and build and care for. Is that Warren?
Elizabeth Alexander will be performing at the First Society Concert Series Friday, and it looks like she'll be performing at her own concert.
Oh. Oh.
Oh.
Oh. Oh. Oh. Oh.
Who announces? First of all, I'm thinking of organizing one of those very fundraising charity flash sales, but I want to first of all make sure I get enough stuff from people to help. Well, maybe it's July 11th, but people were telling me that we can do it or not. And second of all, the tea session out here has been really messy and disorganized. Maybe we had something that could be more. Maybe if I remember there's something like that, I would probably be very good. But right now,
Is that older?
I just want to remind people, I'm one of the three or four people who are involved in the programs for our annual retreat. And I want to remind you that we're having just influence of this year's radio meeting. We're opening two new events, noon today and the day for that annual retreat. So you'll get a kind of a warning in this upcoming year, but then there'll be a registration form. That will be it. There will be no time for many voters who remember to sign up. So, and also this year, it could be wanted to be a 3-day event, which is very important. And as you remind me, too, that this is, unless you choose to be in the door, in which case you're likely to pass, very slightly less than that. If you choose, or to be in the bottom of the finals, it's somewhat less expensive than so probably that 3 days is going to be for the finals too, but and I would appreciate a show of hands of people who, unless you are expecting an announcement to be considering coming to that the finals to your
Labor Day weekend.
So the majority of us who are here are planning on coming, and we will also have guests. My parents will be here at that time. This was the weekend, Labor Day weekend, was the weekend that my brother died last year.
I have an announcement. I'm a long-range planning committee chairperson, and I hope that all of us who are interested in our meeting.
let me know. We don't have a date schedule. Maybe then we'll be discussing at first will be the possible effects of the First Society on us. And on the 12th of July, we'll have a person from First Society who is on that committee that will be interested in come and tell us a little bit more about what the plans are, what the possible plans are, and then we can about the set. This will be on the 12th, Sunday after credit, perhaps even on the catalog. I don't know if we'll have a potluck that day or not.
Any more announcements?
Fully programmed here for Sunday morning, or with other stuff to do on Sunday morning, someplace else, throughout the summer, right up to Labor Day weekend. Special note, I think, the Democratic candidates for Congress from the 2nd District both agreed to come talk to us. And in the fall, I hope that we will have Scott Pflug. I will invite him. And the working title for the program I've given them is Who Needs Congress? And they make of that what they will. On the 12th, it should be interesting. Some of you have heard her, may not have met her, Jean Faraca, Wisconsin Public Radio. And this, I will hope, is going to be a sort of sporadic series running throughout the year. Her title is Not Just a Way to Make a Living, Why I Like My Job. So there will be a complete list of programs in Prairie Fire. Ready for a song? 45. One at the top. We are climbing Jacob's ladder. We are climbing Jacob's ladder. We are climbing Jacob's ladder. We are on our way. Brother, do you love your sister? Sister, do you love your brother? Send them.